to come from the bowels of hell.
The Dana Gould Hour.
Jungle worms and swamp rats run around your feet.
I bought a dog that killed the calf that ate the canary. What is truth?
And once again, welcome back.
Today's show is brought to you by MyBookie, MyBookie. Winning season returns to MyBookie, and winning season means Survivor, Super Contests, and Squares. Invest in your intuition. Bet on yourself. Go to MyBookie.com and use the promo code Dana and double your first deposit, if you know what I'm saying. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. Hooray for sports! MyBookie.com. Now, this is a very special episode of our little show. This has been, no question about it, a nihilistic dystopian period. The sky was on fire for a while. We lost RBG and the horribleness of all that, and that nightmare was capped off here in LA by an earthquake just before bedtime. That was a great day. But so here's what happened. If you listen to the show regularly, you no doubt remember April Richardson, very good friend of mine, very funny comedian. April had been living in LA for years. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, she was in LA kind of spinning her wheels like everybody else. So she goes to England and she meets a guy named Martin Rossiter, who was actually lead singer of the band Gene, if you remember them from the 90s, heyday. J-J-J-G-E-N-E. Gene. Look him up. Anyway, April and Martin meet. 2 months later, they get married. She moves to England. Boom! Her life changes. And this, that was about a year and a half ago. And this is the first time I've spoken to her since then. So listen as we catch up, right here, on our podcast. So let's get on to our filthy business. Lastly, before we go, please allow me to say a word about our Patreon feature. We have one. It's simple, and I hope you sign up. $5 a month gets you the title Dana Gould Hour Sky Cadet. And for that month, every month, you get a bonus interview segment, you get some video content, etc., etc. This is a special show. We're trying to hammer our schedule down, and our Patreon reflects that. We don't have graded levels. For $25, I'm not going to come to your house and shampoo your dog. For $5, you're a Sky Cadet, you get some stuff, and off we go. So go to danagould.com for details. And now, it's on to our filthy business.
Tune in, it's a gas. It's the Dana Gould Hour Podcast.
The Dana Gould Hour. Free and worth it.
Hang on a minute.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. What's up?
Good Lord. April.
This is awesome. I feel I haven't talked to you in like 500 years.
You haven't. You look so British. You have books behind you.
I learned to read once I moved to England in order to fit in.
Now, I was going to just see if this works, which it does. Do you want to just do it? You want to just talk
sure.
for a little bit and I'll throw it on a podcast and I'll tell you
yeah.
why. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I hate to have any human interaction that's not somehow monotone.
Sure. Of course. Why would you? Why would you do it otherwise?
No, but also, I was talking to my girlfriend who lives mm-hmm. with me.
Ooh.
Who you know. Or knew.
I do know her?
I think so. She's not she used to do comedy. She doesn't anymore. She works in.
Oh, okay.
She's lovely. She's in the other room. But long story longer, that in the midst of the shit, like right now, we are like I had shoulder surgery last Thursday. I'm in a splint.
What happened?
I tore apart my rotator cuff and my bicep fell off.
Hold on. How is that possible? It fell off like you had to pick it up off the floor?
Well, no, it was, okay, I'll be very brief. I was in my, you know, so the pandemic happened and
right.
It became apparent that it was going to take longer than we thought. Like I remember when late March
right.
of 2020,
going
like, this is going to be like 3 weeks.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be like 2 weeks? And the theory is that they knew then it was going to take a long time, but they didn't want to freak people out.
Right.
That's a conspiracy I accept.
Sure.
I don't accept Tom Hanks eats babies so he can fly.
But it's so reasonable. And it just makes sense. The science makes sense. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like, what isn't better fuel for flying than baby blood?
Yeah. Adrenochrome and new Adrenacola.
No, but tell me about your shoulder. Yeah.
So anyway, eventually the kid, you know, the kids, I have three kids and they're going back to in the middle of summer. I realized this is going into school. They're going to be in school all day on Zoom, which is how everybody goes to school now.
Right.
And I'm working on things, you know, I'm still working and I have bullshit, you know, horseshit and
right.
bullshit, horseshit and all kinds. So I needed the space. So what I did was I redesigned my garage and constructed like an office out of shelving units. I bought these prefab shelving units at Home Depot and built like an office with,
okay.
And there's a refrigerator and a little table and workspace and whiteboards. And I thought, I'll just do it myself because it'll solve two birds with one stone. I'll kill time because I'm knocking around my house and I'll have a workspace. But I should have had help because.
No, what happened?
I just lifted a giant, I know what I lifted. I just moved a ladder. It was a 25 foot steel ladder. And I put it down and I went, that doesn't feel right.
Oh, so it wasn't like a huge, like you didn't hear like a.
No. It was just like, it just felt like it pulled something. But then 3 months later, it felt exactly the same.
No. So, well, I mean, when you say your bicep, was it like.
Just hurt. It just hurt here and here. And what happened was my bicep, everything tore loose from the rotator cuff.
See, that seems like it would be like the most painful thing of all time that you'd be like writhing in pain.
It can be. It wasn't. I got lucky, but my bicep was sliding down towards my elbow.
No.
Fortunately, it's so small I didn't notice.
Did you look like Popeye? Was it like down here?
Yeah.
Like, oh. Well, so did you have in surgery, they just put it back? Like,
yeah, they just sewed it. I have a big gash on my arm where they just kind of tucked it back up. But basically my bicep went, I'm leaving, mister.
Oh my God. That's so crazy that like all of that sounds like it would be like the most horrific pain possible. And you're just it was no big deal.
No,
I walked it off for 3 weeks.
No, it took a couple months for me to realize, I'd hurt my rotator cuff before. Like 5 years ago and I didn't need surgery and I just figured I'd aggravated it, but no, it didn't. I was in a car accident last summer in your hometown of Atlanta, Georgia.
That's right.
So I'm like, all right, I'm at this point now. It's come to this where I'm always like Bobcat Goldthwait and I every day talking, what are you taking for what painkillers are you on? What are you taking for constipation? What are you doing? How are you doing? You know, it's like we've turned into Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner. We just
totally. Every day.
What do you want? What are you taking for pain?
Wait, so how long do you have to wear this?
Another 3 weeks.
Okay.
It sucks.
Wait, and it's your right arm?
Yeah, when I'm right-handed.
That sucks. Can you write? I mean, are you still able to write with that?
I can clumsily type with my left hand. That's it. You get to sleep in it. That's the drag. You get to sleep in it, which fucking blows. You just basically, it's like you get a good airplane sleep.
Yeah.
it's really
like a real comfortable airplane seat.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so I'm a gimp, you know, walking around the house with one hand. Kat blew out her back. So like she's
screwed in the head. So it's like we are literally, it's like the end of It's a mad world in the house. And
totally.
And the sky here in LA is completely opaque because
the entire
West Coast is on fire.
Yeah.
And then it literally, like, I had to go to the store and there was so much shit going on. I forgot there was a pandemic. Like, I went to the store and I was like, thank God I had a mask in the car. Cause like, oh shit, I forgot. There's also a global pandemic.
Yeah.
But, and so, which leads me to why I wanted you on the show, because I was just telling Kat, like, you are someone, and I don't want to speak for you, that, you know, you, from my friendship with you and our conversations, I felt that you had, were kind of reached the end of your rope with Los Angeles and your chosen profession and the sort of the toxicity, not your profession, but the toxicity around it.
Yeah. Although, you know, what's funny though, is I was doing shows after I moved.
Mm-hmm.
Because I all but quit in a way, like just in the way that I was like, oh, I'm kind of getting to the end of being able to pay my bills, whatever, with it.
And is your whole life now, in England, things are very different. Speak with an affected accent.
I'm trying so hard to avoid that I'm almost aggressive.
I don't hear it.
Because I really am trying. If anything, my husband, he says dude and stuff now, where he's like, fuck you, lady. What are you doing to me?
Do you say, and I want to get in for the benefit of everybody. I want to get into but anyway, so this is the point that I wanted to make.
Okay.
So,
sorry.
No. It's that your story is so positive and so, and it's just so great to have a window in the nihilism of the time. And I was like, no, this is somebody who really was waiting for something to happen and actually just went out and willed it into existence.
That part's kind of wild.
Yeah, and I'm assuming your life is much better now. I'm assuming it's really better than it would be sitting in LA in your apartment. And it's a great story that, you know, if you don't like your life, change it. And
pretty much. I mean, I did like a total 180 almost overnight. Like although it rules now, but I will say, like, the first probably 6 months that I lived here was some of the hardest in my entire life,
because
it's so sudden. I did it at 40. It wasn't like I was 20 where it's like, I'll just reinvent whoever I am and whatever. It's like, I was already 40.
Yeah.
So I was who I was. So
it's like when you're 20, you can go to a Goodwill and find a cool vintage jacket and be
yes.
like, I'm
and then
this
you'd be
person
like,
now.
I'm this guy now. Exactly. And you can't do that at 40. And also I just,
so you shouldn't do it at 40. But a lot of people do.
Yeah. But it was so interesting. There were so many times that I felt like I was like watching myself. Like, you don't know until you're out of it how much of your personality is also based on your environment and contextually. Like, I'm this person in LA. You pick me up and you plop me down in the middle of this place. And now I'm like, who am I here? Because I'm not funny in England. I am not funny in England. That's not for pity. That's not socially. When I first got here and I would like do the same stuff I would do socially in America.
No, it's different. Yeah. It's very different.
Oh,
yeah.
They would just be like, what are you doing? You're so annoying. I don't get any of these jokes. What are you talking about? And I'm like, oh my God. Like, this is what I thought all my value was in America. And now it means nothing in this place. Who am I? Like, it was the first few months.
I would think that that's something in a weird way, a gift to, you know, you go to a new place, you're in, and you're in a new relationship. Although it's a very serious and committed relationship, it's still new, and you're stripped of all of your tricks
completely.
And
that's like the best way to put it. I'm like, I got no more tricks.
But out
my tricks
of,
don't work here.
But out of that, you, I'm assuming, in retrospect, discovered who you were.
Well, I guess I discovered that I had, I mean, this is going to sound sad, and it's not sad.
More,
I don't
mean tricks than you thought.
Yeah, kind of. Like, honestly, like, as much as it sounds like I'm trying to get pity, I'm not. It was like a fascinating, and I'm sure you have it to the same, I'm sure all comedians, when you're growing up, like, that's my thing. It's like, I'm the funny one. Yeah. So that's my identity. I'm the funny one. I know my place. When I enter a room, I'm like, she's the pretty one, I'll be the funny one, like that kind of thing. Or, you know, that's the smart one, I'm the funny one. So
right.
I just knew that that's who I am. And
in
then,
in the monkeys of the world, yes. You're Mickey.
Yeah, 100%. And I was like, I'll hone this. I'll make this my thing. If this is what I got, let's sharpen that knife. And then, but getting here, it's like, oh, I'm not only am I not that person, I'm like not, I'm that person 0% anymore. Like nobody here thinks that's funny. None of this is working at all. But then it made me, it was interesting with Martin, like meeting Martin too, is in all my relationships, I even led with that. Like I was always like, sure. Hey, you're going to want to date me because I'm funny. Right. And like, here comes this guy who's like, I don't think you're funny at all. but in a way it was like so amazing because I was like, well, then why are you into me? And he's like, well, this, and this. I was like, oh, I have other things going on. And again, I don't mean that as a,
I totally understand. I totally understand.
I regret it now.
Shut up. He just yelled, I regret it now. But yeah.
Now I've heard, ask him, I've heard this.
Okay.
All British accents are fake. Is that true?
Dana wants to know, are all British accents fake? Because that's what we've been told. But yeah, so that was kind of an eye-opening thing of like him, what I always thought was the not only the most important thing about my personality, but kind of like the main thing I have to give, the main thing that all my worth comes from, meeting somebody who's like, oh, I don't even care about that. I care about these things. Mm-hmm. It is an interesting dynamic that I've never had in a relationship before.
And I got to say, stepping back, I think it's the only way that could happen.
Yeah.
I think it would have been terrible if you were hilarious right away over there. No, I really do, because you wouldn't have, you know, it's sort of like breaking a bone as I'm speaking, you know, you tell where my mind's at, but like, you know, resetting a bone. It's like, no, we're going to take away all of your bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And you're going to come into this clean. And how do you, and it must have been, I imagine, and I got a sense of it. Like your relationship with Martin was very whirlwind. When you go to England, you meet this guy, you knew who he was because he's a musician.
Yes.
And to your astonishment, you guys click and have a relationship. Not that different from Kat and I. When I knew who she was, and then we met, and to my total astonishment, she had an interest in me, which I to this day I'm still waiting.
Oh, stop
for the punked crew.
I'm sure
to come up. It's been four years.
It's been a years long prank. Yeah, I'm sure.
So, but then you go to England and. You know, then when, you know, once you're there and you're in a new place and it's for real, did you have a depressed period?
Oh, like the worst of my entire life.
Yeah.
Like, no exaggeration.
I'm listening.
Like, truly crying every single day for like six. And again, none of this has anything to do with Martin. Like, sure. He was super supportive and great, but I was like, I have no friends. Well, where I live, the friends that I have, and have had for years live up north. So it's not like people, I can just go to their house every day. Right. So I'm like, I have no job.
You live in Brighton, correct?
I live in Brighton. So I live like right on the coast. But yeah.
And there are riots every day from what I understand.
Yes. Quadrophenia is a documentary. But yeah, there's like, I had no friends. Again, I'm not funny. So I don't know who I am in this place. I don't know how to do stand up here yet. Like, I have no network, you know, in LA, I could walk into the improv and they'd be like, sure, you can have a spot here. Right. I don't know anybody to do that. If I was still going to do stand up, which at first when I got here, I'm like, what am I going to do for a job, friends, all this kind of stuff. And it happened to coincide with last year was like the rainiest year in the history of England or something. Right. So it was like every single day pouring rain, dark, dreary, could not be more opposite than from Los Angeles.
It's almost, so what you're saying is, you're saying that like every day was like a Sunday. Like every day was
I'm saying every day was silent and gray.
You're in a seaside town?
Yes, it's true. Come Armageddon, come indeed. So yeah, it was just like all that together. Yeah. Oh, the first, I'd say 6 months, I was kind of like, yo, did I make a huge mistake? Did I romanticize this thing? And now I'm in the realness of it. And it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
It was difficult. It was so, so, so difficult. Plus, coupled with the fact that like, I missed you. I missed my friends. I would scroll through social media and I'm like, all my friends are still partying and I'm sitting here crying all day in the rain.
Right.
So I did have to kind of...
And you had to check yourself to also, I'm assuming you romanticized LA because...
Of course.
You know...
Of course.
It wasn't as great as...
It wasn't at all. Yeah. When I was there, I was sad. I was like, oh, I'm so sad. I can feel that, you know, I'm getting older and my career is winding down or whatever. So of course I do that. And I had to put rules. Like I had to stop looking at social media and stuff.
Really?
Because I was like, oh my God, this is crushing my soul, even though I know it's all fake.
But you do know that, which is important.
Yeah. So, but then I gradually, we got, and it was also, we were renting a house that was kind of like half underground. Like our house was always dark. It was just everything.
Monitoring your life reminded me of when I moved to San Francisco. When I lived in San Francisco, my apartment was like, you know, it was, we used to joke that it was designed by the CIA to never have sunlight.
Yes, it felt that way where I was like, oh, I moved into like a dungeon from Harry Potter in England. Like that's where I live. And so now we moved, our new place is like super bright, has big windows. Like it's just a completely different vibe. And, you know, I've made friends here now. Yeah. I have a job here now. Like I feel way more normal.
How long have you been there now?
How long? A year and a half, right? Yeah, a year and a half.
And what do you call that in England? A fort year.
That stuff still happens. I've lived here a year and a half and without fail, once a week, if not twice, like Martin will say something and I'm like, I don't know what that word is. And vice versa, like literal words I've never heard in my entire life. He'll just say in a sentence and I'm like, what are you saying? That means nothing to me. And he has to explain. What was the most recent one?
I don't know. Well, I said livery today.
Nouse. What does that mean again?
You know, having the sussing things out.
He said something about nouse, like his daughter. She was like, she's got a lot of nouse or something. I'm like, that's not a word. You just made that up. And he's like, yeah, it means common sense.
That's a new one on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So that kind of stuff still happens. And I still obviously run. I will say.
Let me just say this.
Okay.
And this is the only way I feel bad for you.
Okay.
America has never been better.
Oh, I mean, it's make it great again. How can you improve on perfection, Mr. Trump?
Things here are just so awesome.
Let me be a little bitchy though, because I was a lifelong Anglophile. Before moving here, I had been here like twice a year.
I know you.
Right. But once you live here, you know, that shine doesn't last forever.
Sure.
Like about 6 months, even the accent, I'm like, I get it, everybody. You're smart. We get it. Like, there's a little bit of, wait a minute. Like, y'all don't, and especially I've done stand up here a few times, like when I first, obviously pre-pandemic when it existed as a thing. And there's a lot of whack-ass comics here too. Some of the stand-up is mad corny, real pun-based. And it's infuriating how everyone here heckles. Like heckling here
Yes, I know that.
Insane. Oh yeah, you know that. You did tons of shows in London and stuff. That's still the same where I'm like, oh, it's because all of you think you're smarter than everyone at all times, and you must announce that in every way. Also, the conflict here is like, people go from zero to punch in the face real fast. I'm like, there's no, in America, you would at least.
Yeah, it gets violent very quick.
Yes!
Like, I remember reading a story about Pete Townsend getting into an argument with Ron Wood, so he punched him in the chest, and that's when, not Ron Wood, but Ronnie Lane. And he goes, and that's when he realized that Ronnie was really sick from MS because he just crumbled under his fist. Like, why are you punching your friends?
Yeah, but that's the opener. The opener is punching in the face, and then you start talking. Like, I've witnessed so many pub fights and stuff where I'm like, there's not even the in-between, like, fuck you, no, fuck you. It's like, no, the opener is a punch in the teeth. And then you start yelling at each other. It's like that kind of stuff is still alarming. I was on a handful of bar shows in London, and like it was corny, where I was like, y'all would get roasted if you try to do these jokes in LA.
Yeah.
So it was so corny.
Yeah, I remember when, I mean, I used to go over there a lot 100 years ago, and it was definitely, you had to recalibrate and approach it in a different way. And I remember being at the London Comedy Store and somebody heckling and throwing them off with a real, like, out of the trunk, like,
right,
lot, you know, and them just like explode. Oh my God. You know, it's like, you know, no, I don't go to your job and tickle the monkeys while you blow them. Oh my God.
Right.
He's the man of comedy.
I love it. That culture shock. Yeah. But mainly not even being socially funny. That like bummed me out so much. Yeah. And it was just like, what do I bring to the table then? But then also getting mad, like kind of that petty mad of being out and saying something that bombs and then somebody else saying something and everyone laughs. And I'm like, that sucks. Why'd you laugh at that? Like,
yeah.
Like that kind of thing.
I always feel when I'm over there, I always feel like the Terry Gilliam character in The Meaning of Life when death comes to the party. And they've all eaten the bad salmon. And he's like, excuse me, please. Could I just say one thing? You
know? Yes, totally. Totally. And I get, and then I got all paranoid. For sure, everyone hates Americans, like with good reason. Like, I, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm this loud American. And so when I would go to stores, I'd be like, oh, sorry for talking. I'd be like, hey, where's the whatever? And they would clearly be like, oh, an American. I'm like, I know, I suck. I'm sorry, but I need the bread. Can you tell me where it is? Like, it was like that for the good 6 months.
A terrible Italian. Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm looking for bread.
But that's how, for like the first 6 months, I just felt ashamed of being American and like trying to hide my accent.
But they know, like, they must know that we aren't our government any more than they are their government.
Well, yeah, sure. But I mean, it didn't mean that I didn't feel that.
I mean, our government is historically ridiculous.
Right. Where I wanted to wear a sandwich board everywhere that's like, I didn't vote for Trump, I promise, please. Yeah.
Things have really changed over here. I mean, things are different here. In addition to like the pandemic and stuff. I mean, I've always felt that the president inflicts his psyche upon the country, and the country is ripped in half. I mean, 2020 has been 1968. It's like, I've never seen it as bad. And it's not only the right and the left, it's the left and the super left. You know, the most attacked I've ever gotten was by saying that you should really vote for Biden. And the infuriated Sanders people, another rich motherfucker telling the working class how to vote. All right, go with Trump. It's working great.
I can't look at social media for like 8 zillion reasons, that being one. I can't do it. I can't be told what I'm allowed to like and what I'm allowed to do anymore. And also, I found my parents are total nuts. Like, parents are Trump nuts.
Right. My family are Trump nuts, but they don't go to QAnon lunacy.
My parents are like on the border. My parents, so my stepdad is like, at the beginning of COVID, legitimately sent me the, was sending me like plandemic stuff, right? Like, here's a link to this video, learn about it. It's fake. Like, he was kind of like on the border of it. Like, he didn't say it was fake, but he was like, really think about it, man. Like, think about where it came from. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. So he was like dancing on that line, right? But then when Herman Cain died, he was like, oh, it's real and we should wear masks. It's real now. And I'm like, oh,
you know what?
A Republican guy got it. Yeah. So now it's real. Yeah.
Good for him, though. Good for him. You know, it's like, at least he did that.
But they both love my mom. Oh my God, gets so angry. I feel bad.
It's amazing too. I know, but it's amazing too. It's like, it's all there. Like, there's footage of him shitting on your face and you still think it's great.
Yes. You can't argue with it. I have friends who are in the same boat where it's like Fox News. There's this whole generation of people that are like, I would rather not talk to my own children than see, like, that's, it's just created this family rift in a whole generation of people who are like, I trust Donald Trump over my own flesh and blood.
Yeah, no, people have lost their parents to Fox News. Literally.
Completely.
You know, it's, I have to say, I talk to my family a lot more than I used to because my mom is now, she has dementia really badly. She's in a facility. We know who's not coming up with the cure for COVID. My mom's on that list.
Right. Sure.
No, yeah, she thinks she's in fifth grade and she, you know, it's pretty grim. So we talk a lot more. I think they're all Trump supporters. I think maybe my brother Jim isn't that much, but they're all Republicans, hardcore Trump supporters, and we just don't discuss it. And see, we get along. But here's the thing.
That doesn't work with my mom.
Yeah,
I've said that so many times. Yeah. I've said so nicely, like, hi, can we just not talk about it? Like, in such a sweet tone of voice, and it's just not, not possible.
And that's the thing that, you know, Twitter deprives you of, because we don't talk about it and get along great.
I'm so jealous.
You know, I know it's truly, you know, my brother Jim is, you know, was in the army, became a prison guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, and we talked yesterday for close to an hour just about the Revolver album.
Sure.
You know, he's had an interesting life.
See, that's, I'm so envious that you can find any common ground, because it's like,
we get on great. And it does show you that, like, no, underneath people are all still very similar. And we are a lot more alike than we are different, but there's no money in that. There's no money in exploiting. There's no money in exploiting our similarities. The money is exploiting our differences and furthering the balkanization of the country.
Well, I just have never seen. I mean, look, I know I'm probably rehashing. People have a million similar stories, but with my mom in particular, and my parents have always been Republican. Like, in no way do I ever expect that to change. Of course not. But, you know, the weird, like, my mom's borderline putting Donald Trump posters on her bedroom wall, like, he's the Tiger Beat. It's like insane. I'm like, do you want to fuck this guy? Like, I don't understand.
And what is the appeal? What is it that he does? Is it more than he enrages the people that you hate? Is there anything besides that?
Well, it's that hero worship of you know, I've never felt that way about any politician, even politicians I agree with. I'm like, glad, I'm just going, hey, I'm glad you're doing the right thing, but I don't need to, like, follow your every move. Like, my mom will get all these texts and I'm like, how is it? Who's texting you? Why's your phone going off so much? And she's like, it's all Trump updates. I'm like, oh, you just spend 24 hours a day. Like, it's beyond a.
To paraphrase Tom Kenny's line about a Liberace show, it's like a Kiss concert for old people.
Yes, exactly. He is like this where, and she also gets mad. Anything that happens that, quote, the left does, she'll call me to be like yelling at me about it, which
How old is your mom?
My mom's only, I'm 41. My mom's 67.
Oh, she's young, yeah.
Yeah. But she'll call me like it's my fault because, like, I'm the spokesman for the left in any way. And I'm like, I also now live in another country where I'm like, I extra don't know about this now, mom. But she's like, did you see what your guy did? Like, my guy. And I'm like, I don't even like Joe Biden, mom. I'm not like you. I don't just align myself with whoever's the face of my side.
Right. Yeah.
I can't even talk to her at all for like 5 minutes without she starts yelling at me. She gets so seethingly angry that I don't like Trump that even if I say, hey, can we change the subject? She starts screaming. And it's like,
yeah, that's no good.
You're going to be ashamed that you disrespected him and all this kind of. And I'm like, what planet are you on?
What is she going to do when he loses?
I just then be mad. Well, she loves being mad. So I'm like,
yeah. Well, they're always the victim. That's the whole thing. I mean, it is people. And I get the fact that, and I don't want to dwell on this, but, like, I get the fact that white people have run the table for, you know, close to 300 years in America, and in America alone. You know, it's like, yeah, I get it. They're not going to go quietly.
I
get it. You know, somebody.
And she loves being angry. So to me, I'm like, you'll be happy in a weird way if he loses because you get to be angry. But I will. Here's the thing. I will say that she was I don't have kids. I don't know how that bond is, but like you would think that a mom would want her daughter to be happy. And I was telling her about, you know, I live in England now. I have socialized healthcare. Yeah. It totally fucking rules. I've been to the doctor like 15 times since I lived here because I can.
Really?
And because, oh yeah. And,
and people forget that system was solidified by the conservative Winston Churchill.
Well, that's what I think she is angered by too. That, okay. So that is the thing about living here is that healthcare is very much not partisan here. Like even the most right-wing dudes here are like, yes, the NHS is great.
Right.
So that's shocking.
National Health Service.
Yes. And so that's a cool thing when you're watching TV here, there's no debate on that. Like everyone across the board is like, we love it. It's great. Like, fine. But my mom, I was talking to her on the phone, and when I first moved here, because a huge chunk of living in LA, I didn't have health insurance. So of course I would just like, if I got sick, I was like, gotta ride it out. So I got here and I'm like, let's go get 500 checkups. I'm gonna get my blood taken. I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna get this. Like all these things I couldn't afford previously. And it was so trippy the first time I went because I really did. Martin went with me and after I was done, I was like, what do I do now? And he's like, you just leave. What are you talking about? I'm like, I don't have to like sign something or give them some kind of number or pay. He's like, no, you just go home. And I'm like, this is the greatest.
That does sound surreal.
it is. It's fully surreal for somebody who grew up in the United States. And so I was telling my mom about it. Like she just had asked me what I did that day. And I was like, oh, I went and got a blood test and went and got this thing at the doctor. And she was like, really? Did you have to wait a long time? And I was like, no, not at all. Like I just walked in and did it. She's like, oh, really? You mean to tell me you just walked in and then you just left and there was, because you know how they're always fed these lies of like these long waits or whatever. Right. And I'm like, no, it was super easy and great.
How many people were on the death panel?
Yes. Like she kept asking things leading to that and I didn't have the answer she wanted to hear. And so she was getting mad and I was like, wait a minute, are you mad that your daughter got medical care? Like, that makes you mad. Like, aren't you supposed to be stoked that like, I know that I don't have a disease or something? Like she was so mad that it went off without a hitch and I didn't call to bitch about how terrible it was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That is it. It's just like 90% of the, you know, the frustration with the left from the far left is the inability to get behind socialized medicine. It all comes down to people need fucking healthcare.
Right.
That's the hard candy center of it. But also, unlike Britain, Trump in a way is a great symbol for the United States in that everything is transactional. You know, every relationship is transactional. It doesn't matter. This benefits me, so it's good. And in America, there's that weird belief. And this, you know, I'm not going to say it started under Reagan, but it was in the modern era that was part of it. It was just like, how do we turn a profit on this?
Right.
You know, when one of the things happened in the 80s was that all the deregulation and news became a profit center. And that's when you started to have news for the left, news for the right. News. How does medicine, does it have to be a profit center? People just get information in healthcare.
Right.
People aren't ready to go there because they're afraid that it means socialism. In the meantime, you know, the people that are the most virulently opposed to socialism,
Are the people who would benefit from it the most.
Love to get their Social Security check from the mail to socialist endeavors.
Yes. Yes. I did. I mean, I know we are probably repeating things, but we did watch recently, there's a documentary on YouTube called, what was it called? It's just called like American Poverty or something, or Poverty in America. It's just something like that. It was made by a German crew.
Right. We have the best poverty.
Yeah. America, USA, poverty number one. I think that's the title of it, but they, they follow it. I mean, it's sad. Obviously it's like super sad. Like you're watching it and it's people, honestly, like my aunt and uncle, it's like rural Southern, it's like West Virginia coal mine country. And they follow a handful of families and they live in abject poverty. They live in trailers. You know, this one lady like tries to clean trailers for a living and all of them love Trump. All of them have Trump signs. They're like, Trump's great. And you're just going, what are you talking about? And the main lady has needs dental work, like really badly, has like really messed up teeth. And she's just like, I can't afford to go to the dentist, So some charity, which I can't remember the name, but it's, they have a bunch of people from dental school set up tents. I mean, it's like a straight.
Yeah, no, I did a segment on Real Time with Bill Maher for that, where they come.
They
came to the Felt Forum, the forum in LA. Like, come today and we'll give you a dental checkup.
Yes. And they, the people in this West Virginian town, they were like camping out overnight in order to get in to do it.
Yeah.
The lady camped out. She goes, she gets her, and it's a huge tent filled with just rows of dentists. She gets her teeth fixed. And at the end, she's crying and she's like, thank you so much. And like hugging the people, which great, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, you know, she's like, vote for Trump. We can't have socialized health. And I'm like, you literally just got socialized healthcare. Like, it is you who will benefit from this. Why are you so against it? I will happily pay taxes so that you can have your teeth fixed. Like, why is that bad?
I don't know. It is one of those things. And it's what life has been, especially this year, where everything is upside down.
Yeah.
Trump is now saying that Joe Biden will take away the elements of Obamacare that he has failed to take away. That it's just like, you can't argue with crazy. It's my friend said, it was really interesting. My friend who's a never Trump Republican.
Right.
And, you know, was a big Republican guy. He was on Meet the Press and, you know, he's a big guy. And he was saying, like, talking about the debates, because the debates aren't going to have a policy that, you know, it's just like showing dominance over a chimp.
Yes.
Crispy, crunchy, melt in your mouth popcorn.
I eat popcorn. Everybody eats popcorn. She tastes real nice. Get yourself some now at our refreshment stand.
Popcorn, rich with hot melted butter.
They're true tales from Weirdsville. Tales from Weirdsville. And they're true.
Can your heart stand the shocking facts?
So this little thing called World War II happened. And after the war, large swaths of Great Britain were in desperate need of being physically rebuilt. The country was rubble because of the German Blitz. But who was going to rebuild it? Who was going to physically do the work? There was a manpower shortage. 385,000 British soldiers were killed in World War II, 70,000 civilians. So the UK actively invited immigration from its Commonwealth nations. Operation Rebuild Britain. There was no shortage of jobs in industries such as National Rail, the National Health Service. So the invitations went out from the government of Great Britain to its citizens in places like Jamaica, Barbados. This was the so-called Windrush generation, named after one of the ships they used to travel to Great Britain. But despite the invitation from the government of Great Britain, the Caribbean people who arrived there were often met with intolerance from large parts of the white population of Great Britain. Surprise! The first Windrush arrivals were often denied accommodations, accesses to shops, pubs, and even churches. So, you know, stupidity is universal. But come they did, bringing with them their manpower, their expertise, and most importantly, their culture. At the time, most of the music in London nightclubs was primarily swing music and dance bands. But with the Windrush generation, the London scene was infused with African, Caribbean, Spanish, Cuban music, exciting new musical forms like ska, precursor to reggae. Another thing people were doing right after World War II was having babies. Lots and lots of babies. As in America, this boom in babies became known as the baby boom. And they came of age in the early 1960s. Now, this was just a few years after the birth of youth culture. You see, up until World War II and into the late 40s, teenagers were merely thought of as people who weren't adults yet. Youth culture didn't erupt until the 1950s in the United States, and the birth of rock and roll and Elvis Presley and all that. For the first time, teenagers were viewed as a separate group, apart from kids and adults, with their own style, their own fashion, their own language, their own culture. And if youth culture and the birth of rock and roll was a cultural revolution, and it was, then the shot heard round the world was a song cut in 1954 by a group named
Bill Haley and His Comets.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me.
In America, rock and roll exploded. Bill Haley and the Comets, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Chubby Checker. You ever realize that? Fats Domino, Chubby Checker. Fats, Chubby, Dominoes, Checkers. Think about it, sheeple. Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley. Now, of course, parents and polite society in general were horrified.
That two-beat pattern is the music brought to the United States of America by the communist conspiracy to corrupt teenagers, and it's in every rock and roll number.
The obscenity and vulgarity of the rock and roll music is obviously a means by which the white man and his children can be driven to the level with the...
Yeah, let's stop that right there. We all know where that's headed. Just more enlightened thought from the, quote, good old days, end quote. Anyway, rock and roll in the United States was exported quite successfully to Britain, where it was embraced by British youth culture. And British kids began to emulate Elvis Presley, Gene Vincent, and the like. And they dressed the part with slick back pompadours, leather biker jackets, Edwardian jacket. They called themselves Teddy Boys. Now, one of the reasons that Teddy Boys in Britain and youth culture in the U.S. were able to happen at all was because of the post-war economy. It was so affluent that teenagers didn't have to work all goddamn day when they were done with school. They could go to school and then hang out. Their parents had money because they were working. They could enjoy leisure time. This was new. But not long after British lads began aping Elvis Presley in drainpipe trousers and motorcycle boots and big pompadours, another group arose. The Mods. Mods, who took their name from modernist, a term used to describe fans of modern jazz, as opposed to fans of trad jazz. But mods were sharp, they were cool, they were hip. And although the mod movement was very British, I think in America you look at a character like Peter Gunn. He was kind of a mod. Mods came from the British working class. They were young men who, for the first time, became obsessed with clothes. They dressed sharp, they dressed cool, they wore great shoes. It was really one of the first times that men were allowed to really get heavy into fashion. They watched French and Italian art films, they listened to modern jazz. They were cool. Now, by the early 1960s, mod musical taste began to expand into R&B, and they worked all day. You know these kids, they're working class kids, they're in working class jobs. So they're working all day, and then they go out and they dance at clubs all night. So amphetamines became a big part of mod culture, as did wartime parkas, which kids wore to keep their suits dry in the rain as they tooled around South London on the Italian motorbikes that became ubiquitous to their scene. They were, according to Steve Sparks, one of the original mods, an extension of beatnik and coffee bar culture. Now, at the same time, the Teddy Boy movement is also in full force. These guys rode motorcycles, dressed like bikers. They were more into rockabilly, so keep that in mind. These two are going to meet. Now, in England at that time, pubs closed at around 11 o'clock at night, but coffee bars were open into the wee hours of the morning, and coffee bars had jukeboxes. In fact, in England, you could bring your own records in to play on jukeboxes in a coffee bar. These kids listened to rhythm and blues records, modern jazz, African American music, music brought to Britain by the Windrush generation. So around 63 and 64, British bands devoted to R&B begin to form. These were the Mods' own bands, bands like the Small Faces, the Yardbirds, the Kinks, the Who. But the Teddy Boys are still tooling around. And when you get two groups of youths with a lot of time and energy who happen to hate each other, you're going to get fights. Easter weekend 1964, two seaside resort towns in southern England, Clacton and Hastings. A group of Mods met a group of Teddy Boys, also called Rockers, by the way, and they started fighting, and this fight grew, and news stories erupted, and a moral panic began. What is happening to British youth? The British press went into overdrive covering the clash, no pun intended, between the Mods and the Rockers. Hooligans, screamed the British tabloid press. Wild ones invade seaside town. The Mod-Rocker rematch took place several weeks later in the seaside town of Brighton. Mods came, Rockers came, and you know what happened. Also present at these riots was a young sociologist named Stanley Cohen, who observed the events as an interesting cycle. Mods and Rockers fought in Clacton. It was widely reported by the press and widely exaggerated by the press. People were outraged. A moral panic set in. 2 weeks later, there's another bank holiday, and all eyes turn to the seaside resort town of Brighton. Now, the news media said there was going to be a riot, and they showed up in huge numbers to report on it. The police said there was going to be a riot, and they showed up in huge numbers to police it. Then the Mods and Rockers arrived, and they have to play their part and provide the riot that everyone is expecting. Does this cycle sound familiar?
The media, by their reaction, kept the panic going and therefore, in a sense, amplified it. And the police, by going along with it, added to the drama, and the drama was what attracted the kids there. There would have been no point in going there if it was just like any other Friday afternoon and on the beach. It, you know, without the drama, the phenomenon didn't exist.
In 1972, Stanley Cohen would write a book about it called Folk Devils and Moral Panics, The Creation of Mods and Rockers. In 1973, The Who would celebrate Mod with their rock opera, Quadrophenia. The Mod movement slowly evaporated as the late 60s hippie movement blossomed and swept over youth culture like a tsunami. The Who, having reinvented themselves with the rock opera Tommy, they went from a mod band to psychedelic power pop to proto-punks to swaggering 70s-era arena rock guitar gods. In 1973 and 72, Pete Townshend looked back on Mod. The album was accurately described as opening a window into the past. For those who were there, it was a love letter to a time of rebellion and passion, music and belonging. And for those who were discovering it for the first time, it was a glimpse into a way of life that had long since disappeared. Mod didn't stay disappeared. Like all forms of youth culture, it just cycles around. Again, no pun intended. In 1977, saw the album In the City by The Jam, an unabashed mod band from the London suburb of Woking. In 1979, a film version of The Who's rock opera Quadrophenia appeared. Quadrophenia, if you haven't seen it, is a brilliant movie. It is a perfect snapshot of British youth culture in 1963-1964, in the same way that American Graffiti is a perfect snapshot of American youth culture at the very same time. Watch them both. And if you want to see a moral panic, turn on the news. Winning season returns at MyBookie. And winning season means doubling your first deposit. It also means Survivor, Super Contests, and Squares. Hooray for sports!
Look, I would not recommend a service if I didn't use it. I do use it. I didn't. I was never a gambler, ever. But I was talking to my brother on the phone, and he told me about it. So while we were on the phone, I went to mybookie.com. And it's great. It's easy. And now it's the thing that we do. You know, we bet often against each other just for spite. I never bet more than I'm willing to lose. My dad kind of does it now. It's really great. It's fun. Again, I never bet more than I want to lose, but I enjoy it. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet, you win, and they pay. At MyBookie, winning season means hitting all your parlays and props. I don't know what that means. With your feet up and watching your team win. NFL season's coming back, God willing, hockey season. So what I like about it is you're basically betting on yourself. Invest in your own intuition and use the promo code Dana to double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. And it's just designed to add more excitement to the sports and the games that you already love and enjoy. We're all home. Let's make the most of it. From live betting to championship futures, every play you want to make is waiting at MyBookie. It's simple. Make your picks, win, collect your cash, which I have done. You do make money. Anyway, use the promo code Dana, D-A-N-A, double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today at MyBookie, MyBookie. Okay?
And now, on with the show.
With the BLM movement, it's like you fan every fire. You turn up everything because you thrive in chaos. And it is, it's like 1968 all over again. It's just madness. And there's going to be a crazy cultural hangover from all this.
Sure.
Where we're all, it's like, you know, everybody's going to be a stripper in a couple of years because we're all like left our abusive family and it all settles totally. Down.
I have guilt. There is guilt that I feel being here, that like I got out before the shit really hit the fan. Like I feel guilty sitting here. England does have its bozos too, but for the most part,
what is the attitude? What is the attitude towards Boris Yeltsin over there? Because for a while he was a bozo.
Everybody hates Boris Johnson now. I mean,
Boris Johnson, Boris Yeltsin was the Soviet Union in the 1980s.
There's still a weird comforting thing about England is there's still the illusion of consequences here.
Yeah.
There's still kind of is like, if somebody in the government does something shitty, the news is like, hey, this guy did a shitty thing, right? Everybody, there's the illusion that they're going to pay for it at least somehow. Whereas obviously in America, that's almost meaningless.
Yeah,
so
true.
People pretty
much. Well, they're celebrated because they get away with it.
Right. Whereas here, you at least have to like go on an apology tour type thing and be like, I know I suck. I did this thing. It's real bad. Sorry, everybody. Like there's still some accountability here from what I can tell. But
is there Fox News in Britain? I know. Do you have to go?
No. Martin is just like telling me things he wants me to say. He's very politically active. So he's like, say this.
He can come in.
You want to come talk? Are you sure?
Well, at least say hi. I've never like met him formally.
Yeah, come here. Actually, come meet Dana. We're just like sitting in sweat, so he's probably.
Hey, Dana.
Hey, how you doing, Martin?
I'm all right. I've got my Piggly Wiggly Alabama t-shirt.
Oh my God, I'm going to email you guys something. My friend, nice to meet you. My friend just yesterday created a fake. It's so weird that you're wearing that. My friend Chris Chapin, who's a genius, created a full-page supermarket circular ad for Wiggly Piggly. Among the items are Jan Murray throat steaks.
Yeah.
I'm just going to email it to you and you can enjoy it. It's
I bring Martin some Southern
T-shirt staples.
Yeah, like whatever. I have a Waffle House t-shirt. He's got a Piggly Wiggly t-shirt.
What I love about you is that you're actually bothered to set up a proper microphone for this.
Yeah, he's got his pro.
I don't have a lot going for me, man. I got to milk this. People see me and they think I'm doing something important.
What do you think people think now about Boris Johnson?
Basically, they fucked up COVID badly here.
Uh-huh.
I think him.
That's so hard for me to relate to.
Yeah, I know. It must be awful for you.
Picture this. A government not knowing what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, basically, there's a sort of three-way race to be the biggest idiot between Bolsonaro, Trump, and Johnson. So right. Basically, when we first went into lockdown, everybody was very sympathetic, but there have been U-turns after U-turns after fuck-ups after fuck-ups.
Right.
And people are starting to see through it.
No. Also, remember how he almost got it? Was
yes,
it was
like, he got it. Yeah, he got it.
After being like, it's not a big deal, and then he was in ICU.
Yeah, I hope you'd have some sort of road to Damascus moment, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But, sadly, no.
No, no. And so you guys still have to wear masks when you go out?
Oh, no, we're shit.
Yeah, you don't have, it's not a mandate. I mean, we do, the two of us do, right, but yeah. Other people do, but it's not required.
Well, you're meant to in shops.
Right, yeah.
But people aren't. Yeah. I think we're actually in some ways worse than you. You have American exceptionalism, but we're just a...
Yeah, and let's not forget that. We are God's favorite country. Let's...
Yeah. Well, also the people...
are you a bumper sticker?
People here...
And you might not like it, but Roger Moore is God's favorite James Bond.
Dude, that's like one of the reasons we bonded is because he's our favorite James. But he asked me that, and hilarious. I was like, Roger Moore.
That's
like,
insane.
Oh my God, me too. Let's get married.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's totally like one of the things we bonded on for real. But I will say the people here who don't wear masks.
I can describe those movies in three words. Acres of lapel.
He's the only one that Roger Moore's the only one who understood the campiness of James Bond.
Well, it's very funny not to go down that route, but the last interview I did on the podcast was with this guy named Josh Barnett, who is a mixed martial arts heavyweight champion. I have nothing in common, but oddly, he's a friend of my girlfriend's, and he's just a D&D nerd.
Right.
Who's like, you know, he's like 6'4" and when he was 12.
Right.
And, you know, just was a giant. Yes, exactly. But he like basically like kids were picking on him, and he just learned how to fight as a survival thing. But he's really, and he was, we were talking about, and he said that Roger Moore was his favorite James Bond because, like, I get that it's a fantasy world with him. Daniel Craig, he's too close to a guy that really could be in a fight.
Right.
When I see him in a fight, I can see all the bullshit. Where Roger Moore is like, Roger Moore does the ninja training in 3 days.
Yeah.
It takes all the other people 40 years. He gets it on a long weekend.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Dana, I've got to ask you a question. What color is my hair?
Well, I'm too busy falling into your eyes to really see your hair. I'm going to say it's Mission Impossible era Peter Graves.
Thank you. I'll take that. Or Ilya Kuryakin from the main.
That's very, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, I will say the people here that don't wear masks, though, they're quiet about it. Like, nobody here is like, I ain't gonna wear no mask. It's my freedom.
Well, I tell you what, it's growing, though. I mean, we're literally, I think, if America are the Huskies, we're on a sled that's only sort of 4 years behind the Huskies. That's a terrible metaphor, but that's
great.
That's where we're going.
I keep having to tell myself this all the time. Like, half of the United States thought that the right to own another human being was a great thing to go to war over.
Right.
Somebody chopped down the last tree on Easter Island and thought it was a good idea.
Right.
You know,
well, you bring such words of comfort, Dana. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's just a, you know, I saw just this morning, I took the dog for a walk and I saw two chimpanzees on horseback with rifles. Whatever happens.
Well, going back to Johnson, though, Johnson is essentially Donald Trump who's read Latin.
Yeah.
Yes, Donald exactly. Trump,
yeah. Read. Yeah.
Well, that's the saving grace of Trump is that he is also as much of a feral intelligence that he has for communicating with people. He's also stultifyingly stupid. His worst impulses have been prevented by his titanic incompetence.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you were smart, then we'd really...
Yeah, our fear is that, you know, we'll get like a Tom Cotton or a Ted Cruz who's actually smart. And, you know, that's highly likely. Highly likely. You know,
or Ivanka as the first female president.
Yeah, God, true.
Get that first image out
of... But, you know, Ronald Reagan was just Barry Goldwater with a more applicable package. You know
what's really a bummer? I was watching some documentary about Ronald Reagan, and he had like killer hair, dude, the whole time. I get why people would vote for this hair.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so funny because Rod Serling, and when he first ran for governor of California, Rod Serling said, I think it's very, very dangerous that people that used to be actors run for office. He's like, Soylent Green is people. Yeah, yeah. That's all right. See you later. Yeah, see you later.
Yeah. This guy had a fucking killer head of hair until the end.
Yeah.
I can see why people were seduced by that.
Do you want to
even when, as the doctor said, his noodle was on the fritz. The president has puddin' brains.
I do feel guilty being here a lot of the time because I do just feel like, it's like I feel awful that you're sitting there in a place that's on fire and 120 degrees.
It's pretty crazy.
And I walked down to the beach yesterday and like sat on a bench.
When you go to the beach, do you hear in the back of your mind every time, do you automatically sing, is it me for a moment?
You know what's crazy about living here? I will say there is a place I walk by that makes me think of, there's Quadrophenia Alley.
Yeah.
So I do.
Is that where he shagged that chick? Is that where they filmed the scene?
Yeah. So walking by that, like it's weird. And walking by the Grand Hotel to go to the beach. So there are songs, like there are things for that where I'm like, oh, I live in Quadrophenia.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
We get scooter rallies down here where you get sort of 30 stone mods with multiple mirrors to crushing the wheels of their top
Lambrettas. Yeah. Would you say that beach is a place where a man could feel he's the only soul in the world that's real? I'm just curious. I love that idea. Like they're now 300 pounds. I've never associated a parka with the word snug.
Totally. Yeah, they do. That's like once a year, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, maybe more than that, two or three times a year. But what the thing that also makes me laugh about things like that is the Liam Gallagher generation. I always imagine what they're going to be like in care homes.
Yes.
When you get to 30. Well,
care homes, or as we call them in America, underpasses.
Yeah. Totally.
But then they go around going with fucking Acer on their little walkers, giving it the
I've always said these people who have sleeve tattoos, and now it's a 20% of the country, when they're old in nursing homes, it's just going to look like a bunch of clowns that gets caught in the rain. You know, it's just going to be so running.
Or a Salvador Dali picture.
Yeah. Totally. You got to look up a guy. What's that guy's name?
What guy?
Okay, speaking of tattoos, there's a guy in Brighton who has tattooed himself black, including his eyeballs. Because I see him walking around once in a while, and of course he has like giant spacers, but he's famously... He's a white guy who tattooed him. He's black, though. He's like jet black, like ink tattoo black.
Isn't that dangerous?
Yes, very. What's his name? What's he called? He's just called like...
The weird...
If you just tattoo your tattoo guy.
That guy.
Yeah, him.
That guy, Brighton, it'll come up. But yeah, I've seen him out.
He's terrifying.
He's genuinely terrifying.
Yeah, and that, you know, and there's a doctor that did it. Well, then let me ask you a question about national health. Like if you want to go get it like a boob job or something... You know,
cosmetics, no, unless...
But you can get it done, but you've got to pay for it.
Yeah. I mean, you could have a sort of labial reduction if it was over 3 inches long, apparently.
Why do you know that?
I like what I'm hearing.
You know, YouTube. No, you haven't told them about Naked Attraction.
Dana Gould, when this is over, you have to Google a television show called Naked Attraction.
Do I have to?
Listen to me right now. I've never been more scandalized and I'm not some kind of prude, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack. It is a television show that airs in Great Britain.
Oh, mainstream TV.
Straight up mainstream TV. I'm not talking about Channel 702. It's on Channel 4, mainstream TV. It's a dating show where everyone's naked. They show everything. No censorship. The way that you choose... Say I'm the contestant, right? I'm a straight lady. So I would come out. There's six pods with naked dudes standing in them. and they raise the shutter. The rounds are, the first round is dicks. It's just, you only see from the dick down, and you walk around and you're like, oh, no, thank you. Too weird. Oh, this one's crooked. Boo. Like, you go up gonzo nose to nose, staring at dudes' dicks. And then you pick one, the one you like the least. And then the next round is the chest down. And then you're like, weird nipples. Bye, guy. You go around and do that. And then the last round, you get to see their faces.
Oh, but yeah. And sometimes they lick cream off them.
Oh, it's the most insane thing. I've seen every type of dick imaginable and vag, every type of piercing.
I've seen every type of dick imaginable driven mad. That's yeah. the first sentence of Howl. He scratched it out. No, this yeah. doesn't work. Yeah.
I've seen the best dicks of my generation. Hysterical. Yeah,
it's called Naked Attraction.
Well, Naked Attraction, and everyone here acts like it's normal, and it's a normal thing. It should be on TV.
My youngest daughter's favorite show on television is The Great British Bake Off.
And I love it.
I had to explain to her that some people in Britain do not bake in tents; that they actually have homes.
Why did you tell her that? That's not true.
Spreading rumors.
But so I'm hoping that Naked Attraction is not the next step.
I am not yet used to how uncensored. Yeah, it's like after 9 p.m. here, you can show whatever you want on TV, and that takes some getting used to, even for somebody. It makes me feel like I'm a fucking pilgrim or something. I am literally grasping my pearls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, like all my kids have seen the WAP video and heard the song.
How do you feel about that?
Well, to me, WAP means witches and pumpkins. I'm, I'm a Halloween guy.
I'm pro this. Like, genuinely, as a dad of teenage girls, like, what's your threshold for stuff like that?
I know enough that I'm not supposed to like it. You know,
right.
So I have that going for me. It's like, I'm not supposed to like it.
But is there any part of you that's like, I'm becoming my parents? I'm becoming the guy I didn't think I would become.
No, because I was
scandalized by it.
No, because I was utterly unsupervised as a kid. I
sure thing
could have done anything. You know, so I'm just like, my whole thing as a parent, as you probably have already picked up, is that my kids aren't afraid of me at all. I don't have like a parent vibe. Like I definitely, as a result, my kids are great, and they're 12, 16, and 17 going to school in Los Angeles, going to private school in Los Angeles.
Sure.
And they're great kids, and they sweat their grades and things like that. They don't, no one's in rehab or puking up their lunch or, you know, and they're super, super funny and great. So I'm very, 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 very lucky. Now, Martin, you have kids as well, correct?
I've got three girls, yeah.
Yeah, me too. Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. What are the ages?
I've got female sperm.
Yeah. Well, my kids are all adopted from China, so I can't. I thought my gene pool can stop, and the world will continue.
Well, I mean, do you?
World
not,
will
do
move on fine.
Do you put any limits on social media use or anything like that?
I could, my daughter, my youngest, yeah, my youngest has filters, but the older two, I just like, you know, the puzzle, well, they live with their mother half the time, and she's pretty evolved, so.
Right. Yeah, I guess I'm just curious.
Even so, no, in answer to your question.
Well, we watched a documentary earlier tonight, that Social Dilemma documentary.
And, what's that? Oh, yeah. In fact, that is on my list to watch tonight on Netflix.
It's frightening.
It'll make you want to throw your phone in the ocean, just straight up. But then I wonder how, I also found out my stepdad, on top of, again, my parents have been Trump people for forever. That's not a surprise. It's the degree to which I always thought that they were kind of, my mom is not online at all. I found out that my stepdad is a super turbo online guy. Like, he's addicted to Facebook and addicted to Twitter and is constantly, literally posts on Facebook 50 times a day, is the kind of guy who like tweets at Greta Thunberg, like, show up, fool. I found this out only recently.
Because Greta's too liberal for him?
Yeah. Oh, he tweets at AOC, like, shut up, you bitch.
Yeah.
I didn't know any of this until recently, that now I'm like, my stepdad's almost 80. So my almost 80-year-old stepdad is just turbo online guy now yelling at left wing. He calls Democrats demon rats.
And I think he's cute.
So I'm like, oh, this isn't just affecting teenagers. My elderly stepdad is addicted to yelling at people online.
Right.
It's the, that generation are the most fucked. I'm convinced of it. Much more than Generation Z or whatever you pronounce it. But that generation are the one who are just divorcing their children.
Yeah, they're early baby boomers.
Yeah, and so after watching that, I don't know. I feel like such a grump. I feel so like I don't want anything to do with any of this. Everyone, get off of it. Teenagers and elderly people, get off of this shit. That's kind of where I'm at now.
I try to imagine the guy, the old people on the train in Hard Day's Night, going, "I fought the war for you lot. Bitch, sorry, you won."
Right.
Now I'm that guy. It's like every generation thinks the generation coming up behind them is destroying the world. We might be the one, maybe the first time they're right.
I agree. Like that's, I try to check myself and I agree. Like I'm like, oh, am I just being like an annoying old lady now? And am I going, these kids today? But then when I saw how much my stepdad is into it, I'm like, oh, everyone is susceptible to this. I don't know.
Well, they're lonely. I mean, they're, you know, that generation, their kids are fucked off. They're probably divorced. They're sat at home. They're drinking gin with their best
friend. And there's no sports on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
So much of it is just baseball, football. You know, the basketball's not on. Football's not on. I'll hate the demon rats. The one thing that America doesn't have, which is terrible, is a consistent, non-biased news source. It's like you do have people literally living in different realities. Your stepfather does not live in the same version of reality that you live in.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, that is another thing I'm thankful for here
in England. What was that film that we saw? The vice president who...
Vice?
Yeah, Vice, who changed the law to allow news. I mean, CNN is terrible. MSNBC is terrible. They're as terrible as Fox in a lot of ways. It's that sort of reinforcing your beliefs. I mean, we sit and watch CNN here sometimes, and none of them are news channels.
I am thankful that we have BBC. Like, it's against the law here to have a Fox News.
That's great. No, my friend says, my friend Mike says, I said, you know, he was watching the news. He goes, no, you weren't. You don't watch you don't watch the news. You watch the news business.
Right.
That's true.
Having the BBC here is great because it's completely non-biased. Although, like, then you have people inventing whether or not it is.
Well, what you get with the BBC is the left claiming it's too far right and the right claiming it's too far left, which suggests it's doing okay.
Yeah, they worked the refs a lot. And there's a great documentary that we just watched called Burn This. It's about Watergate. And, you know, after Watergate, the Republicans just said, like, that's never going to happen again. And they started working the refs in terms of media. And now what you get is 17 people were murdered on a shitty roller coaster. And now with the pro shitty roller coaster viewpoint, you don't need the pro shitty roller coaster. There are not two sides to every fact.
It's not like, let's hear them out, guys. By the way,
have you seen Class Action Park?
No.
Is that
Is that out now?
Oh, I just watched it. It's on Netflix or something out here. Yeah, Class Action Park is amazing.
Okay.
What I didn't realize is that my ex-wife grew up 20 minutes from there and went there like 100 times.
Oh, no. I know tons of people. Allison Becker grew up in New Jersey and went there all the time. Yeah. The only thing is I now have to trick my computer. There are certain things I can't watch, and I had to get a VPN to make my computer think I'm in the States so that I can like secretly watch U.S. Netflix things and U.S. HBO things.
You're really sticking it to the man.
Yeah, I'm doing it illegal shit.
Are you April Rossiter or are you April Richardson?
I still just go by April Richardson. I didn't change my name.
Quite a slap in the face. Anyway.
fine. I'm Martin Richardson.
you're still Martin Ono Rossiter.
Yes, you see who's the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Martin Ono Rossiter.
Yeah.
Martin, how old are you?
I'm 50.
Oh, dude, I'm 56.
Yeah, he just turned 50.
Yeah.
You look 55.
I do. I feel 55. I feel 55. But, you know, we grew up with all of that, you know, like the Beatles was our
thing. I'm a little bit upset that you actually asked my age hoping that I was older.
Hoping with every fiber of my being.
You looked at my face and thought, he's my age.
He's my age.
Shut up. Oh, that British humor.
For I am forever the Napoleon Solo to your scruffy Ilya Kuryakin. I remember, like, when John and Yoko were like got together, it was like, you know, now we're one person. Now we're John and Yoko. And everybody grew up thinking, like, that's what love is. You meet that one person. And you realize when you're older, completely terrible relationship, very unhealthy. No, this is not to be, this isn't the aspirational, this is a codependent.
No, I disagree.
This is a grotesquely dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, that's
no, iconic. once you meet your soulmate, you stop talking to your kids and you move
on. he's doing an accent, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing a bad impression of John Lennon.
For a Yank, it wasn't bad.
I'm doing the impression of John Lennon from the Beatles half hour Saturday morning cartoon.
all the little crows in the Jungle Book.
They
were the Beatles.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Well, it's so funny. I'm in this email group with a bunch of very esoteric, like Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, the screenwriters who wrote Dolomite and Ed Wood and all that stuff. And we were talking about, up until Sgt. Pepper, the Beatles were a punchline.
Really?
Like, to the Jack Benny, Bob Hope generation.
Yeah.
Jack Benny and Bob Hope were doing sketches and wigs. Making like fun of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Up to 66.
Yeah.
You know, they were still, and then it wasn't until Sgt. Pepper when that kind of like stopped. And people said, no, there's actually something more to this than that.
You haven't heard Bieber's new album.
Whose new album?
Bieber's.
Oh, shut up.
What? I don't even know what that is.
Justin Bieber.
Oh, Justin Bieber.
He's about to release his Sgt. Pepper.
Oh, shut good.
Up. He is.
I thought there was a band named Beebus. I thought you were saying Beebus, B-E-E-B-U-S. Like there was a band named Beebus, and I was just like pretending to be hip. Oh yeah, no, I'm really into Beebus.
Yeah, man, they shred.
What is the big show in England right now on television? Or is there anything anymore? Because it's also bifurcated like you're in the States.
Well, I think production, what would normally be coming out for the autumn schedule hasn't, because production's
from
COVID. I mean, what do we just watch the news.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing that we watched was Fleabag, like the rest of the world.
Right.
The last thing that was like on TV, because we just watched like Netflix and stuff. I mean, what's the most, what TV show do we watch as it was on TV recently?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry, you've gone down a conversational cul-de-sac.
No, that's fine. Because Kat really loves Succession.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with it. He doesn't care though.
Kat watches it. I can't watch a show where nihilism and nice clothes.
Don't you know this about me? That my favorite genre is like finance yelling. Like I love like people. I'm serious. Like, dude, I swear I worked out this bit with you. Remember?
It was that. It was also the thing you said. It was the thing with Karen. You did a thing with Karen Kilgariff that made me laugh so hard, which was it was a thing about you went to a spy movie and what you demanded from a spy movie was that weird expression. It's like a French expression. I can't remember.
Well,
made me laugh so hard. I can see you on stage saying it too.
Well, because I also like finance. Yeah, I love dudes in suits yelling about stocks. That's like my favorite genre of TV and movie, because to me, that's fantasy. That's like Lord of the Rings to me.
But that's the thing. I say this to Kat. It's like as a professional television writer, like, you know, they'll hang act breaks on financial gibberish. Well, if they miss the VIG by over 12, there's more billions is the other show that she loves that does that. It's like, well, they missed the VIG by 12%. That means they're not going to be there for the overage.
Dun, 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 dun. I love that shit. How is that any different than Middle Earth language? That to me is like fantastical language. I'm like, ooh, what is an IRA? Yeah. I'm intrigued by your fake language you made up for this show. Like, I love dudes yelling about stocks.
It's acronym like, porn.
Acronym porn, just like,
because it's a world, it's like the fantasy of being an adult. It's like exactly what I thought being an adult was like when I was six. And so I'm like, ooh, look at these adults in their suits and their stocks and their briefcases and they're yelling business talk. Like it's a fantastical idea of being an adult to me. I love it. I love Succession.
The last new show that we got into that I really loved, My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferrante. It's a Italian show about two girls and their friendship, lifelong friendship. Really great.
We'll have to watch that. I also want to watch I May Destroy You. Everyone here is going apeshit.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I hear it's great.
My Penis and Me, which is coming on next week.
That is a real show that's coming on here. Penis and Me.
And Me? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's men discussing their relationships with their dicks.
Their relationships.
Well, I have
Madame Palm and her five lovely
daughters. I was just going to say, well, I'm in a cast. You can imagine what mine was.
That's how you, it's a jerk off injury.
Tore my shoulder out. Oh, I watched Picard. I liked Picard. I don't like Discovery, but I do like Picard. The Star Trek.
We're straight up documentary people lately.
Documentary and quizzes. We love general knowledge.
We are. Are you watching The Vow? Documentary about Nexium.
About what?
Nexium, that cult.
I don't know nothing about this.
Please watch The Vow. It's on HBO.
So Nexium was like, it's basically Scientology on steroids.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Oh, okay. It's business Scientology.
It's business Scientology, but it turns
deeply dark.
Yeah.
Well, it's like QAnon. It's like, how weird can we get? The problem is the weirder we get, the more people we attract. It doesn't go the opposite way. Like, no, this is so weird, we're going to lose people. This is so weird, we now have everybody.
Yes, because they're already invested. I can't wait to find out that Q was just like some 14-year-old skateboarder.
They know who it was. It was seven hackers that got together and did it.
They do know that?
Yeah, no, they've already been interviewed. It's seven hackers that got together and made it up. But it is to the point now that the fact that they admitted it was fake just reconfirms the fact that it's real. Like, you can't. Oh, right. They know they've lost control of it. They know it's.
I gotta look that up. I didn't know that.
They got to you.
Well, that's the thing, right?
You are so naive,
Martin. That's... When you're my age, you'll understand.
But that is the thing, right? You were saying about different realities. It's an unwinnable. You're exactly right. Like, as soon as you go, well, then that didn't. It's like, well, you would say that. It's like the burden of proof is always. Yeah,
God is love. This kid's God is love. This kid has cancer. He works in mysterious ways. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's the drowning the witch.
Yes, it is exactly it. That's
just
exactly
like prove. Yeah, they're like, prove it's not real. And I'm like, why is the burden of proof on me? Like, you're the one who thinks this. Yeah. So I didn't know that the hackers admitted it, that it was just a bunch of people gone.
I'll find when I send you the Wiggly Piggly one sheet, I will that article. But it's a great story. You know, your story, I tell your story a lot, that is somebody like, sometimes you put something out there emotionally or psychically or however it happens, and it's like a homing beacon or like a ping, and sometimes it gets picked up, and you have to be open to following it. You know, you have to be open to...
You never said this guy was a hippie.
Yeah, but it's true. It's like, that's the main thing.
It is weird. It is weird.
It's weird.
I'm not a hippie. I'm not a hippie, but my girlfriend is a hippie. And like, literally, like, I'll get grocery lists. Like, what are essential oils?
They're very essential. But yeah, we got married 2 months after we met each other.
Yeah.
And then I sold all of my things and moved to a foreign country. And it's why that was just... We celebrated our 2 years.
And normally that is a sentence you read scratched into the wall of a jail cell in a foreign country.
Right, but it's like,
I'm selling my kidney.
Or the beginning of a Muddy Waters song or something.
But it was just the sort of thing where I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? I really was. I was like, well, then what happened? We break up and then I move back? Like, who cares? I had fun.
Yeah, in LA, you're not missing anything.
Or, Well, that's comforting.
Yeah. Today they announced the Pacific Dining Car is closing. I mean, LA is dying in the vine like some untended grapes.
Well, I do feel like even if I had stayed by this point, I probably would have had to go to my mom's or something. Like,
You'd have been in hell.
I wouldn't have been able to handle it.
No, I've said it before. Like 1968, this year is a watershed year where culture will reassemble itself over the course of 2021 to 2024, 25, 26, and it will solidify as something new in the way that the post-war world fell apart in 1968 and became something else in the mid-70s, early 80s. And we don't know what it'll be yet, but there's a lot of great, you know, the BLM movement's great. It's a lot of great stuff, but it's messy and scary to people.
We do a podcast together, and there's been a couple of episodes I think that you'll like, of songs that you'll like. It's just
Be great.
We dissect a song that I like Martin.
Well, no, hang on. I dissect a song.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I'll send you a couple episodes because he's a genius, and he'll be like, I present a song, and I'm like, hey, I really like the song. Tell me why. And then he'll break it down, and he'll be like, well, these notes sound like a person crying. And you like that.
Wow. Because
that's it's crazy. Like, there was one with a harmonica and he's like, this sounds like a person wailing, like tears. That's why you like it. It makes you sad. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. Like, yeah.
Wow. That is crazy.
He's right about that. I am a genius.
Please send me. Yeah. Please send me that. We'll,
I will for sure.
That'll bracket this and we'll send some people your way.
It's a fun thing that we can do in our living room. So,
last question: can you fly around England
on a broom? Yeah,
but I mean, like, my brother was asking me. Like, you're going to come back to Massachusetts? Like, I don't know if
I can walk to Scotland in a day and a half. No. You don't need to fly. Well,
commercial flying is also like, I don't know if we can.
We don't fly domestically here. It's very rare. Because
you can train everywhere too. Yeah.
But people are flying around Europe.
Yeah,
definitely. But the thing is, different countries keep on getting quarantined. So you know, people go on holiday to the Algarve in Portugal, and then suddenly there's an announcement that if you come back from Portugal, you're going to be. And there's this sort of mass rush to Porto Airport. And people trying to get in.
That's the amazing thing. It's like, you know, living here, they don't really cover other countries. They're not that important.
Right. No, but you can take trains and stuff still here.
Right.
We can take a train if we want to. But London is pretty closed. We haven't done, the two of us have not left our apartment except to go to the grocery store like this entire time.
Good Lord.
So whereas I used to just jump on a train to London once a week, that was the saving grace when I first moved here. Funnily enough, the person I hung out with when I first got here was Billy Bragg. Cause I was like, Billy and my friend Grant were in London a lot. So I was like, can I come meet you for lunch? Can I come hang out with you? And so I would jump on a train, and that was kind of my weekly at least familiarity. I know these people, but now we don't really do that. Cause like London's not totally open yet.
And also I don't want to travel on the tube.
Exactly.
They say they're guessing the end of 21 is when things will start to.
I honestly am the luckiest person ever because
have grandchildren.
Yeah, truly. Listen, because the day, God, that's the other crazy thing that's going to make you feel so old.
Oh God, don't. Yeah, mate. See, my eldest are 22 and 20. So,
You know, I went, my friend.
And they sex. They sex. I know they do.
No.
No.
Yeah, my friend. I remember going through my friend becoming a grandfather was very, very traumatic for him. But then it's fine.
I'm not ready for that. But so right before COVID, did I see you when I was there? Because I was there visiting.
No, you didn't.
Well, because I was doing shows with Hardwick.
Because of our family's feud.
Yeah. The last ever show I did was at the Punchline in San Francisco.
Oh,
we did
a week in
San Francisco. Then I stayed a few days extra at Karen's, and then I flew home the day that like stuff was on the news in America. Like Chip took me to LAX, and it was empty. It was like crazily empty. Where we're like, wow, this is really weird. So I fly from LAX to London that night, go to a concert with a friend of mine in London. fully ride the tube, go to a concert, sneezing and coughing all over the place, probably breathing in everyone's shit, get here. And then the next day we move into our new house. And that's when the news was like, hey, quarantine time, everybody.
Wow.
And I was fully like, oh, I definitely have this. Like, there's no way.
Sure, I'm
licking the tube handles. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm in a plane, in the tube, in a concert, every single scenario. And
it was a COVID-19 concert was the name of the band.
Yes, that was the band. I've literally done the entire checklist of what you're not supposed to do in the last 24 hours. There's no way I don't have it. And then magically, I didn't get it. But then
you might have had it. You don't know that. You could have been asymptomatic. You could have
tested for it, yeah.
But yeah, so since March 15th, we've been sitting in our apartment.
Wow. Yeah, no, same. I mean, it's nice to know it's global.
It's a global shared misery.
There is no globe.
Yeah.
Hey, I read it on the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, this is my oldest daughter, who is hilariously just walked past me. She wanted to go to the Flat Earth Convention. Like,
yes.
Like 2 years ago. I said, why the hell do you want to do that? I go, we'd have to take a plane to get there so we'd know they were full of shit before we even got to the convention. And she goes, to hear how crazy they are and get some Flat Earth merch.
Merch! Some Flat Earth merch! Did you not watch the documentary about those guys?
No, but that's what we'll probably do tonight.
You have to.
So I want to watch The Vow?
Oh my God, you have to watch The Vow.
The Vow, Social Dilemma.
And the
Flat Earth.
The Flat Earth, Did you watch I'll Be Gone in the Dark?
No, because I knew it would give me nightmares. Even the times when
Weird to hear Michelle's voice again.
Yes.
That was very strange to me.
Socially, when I'm talking to Karen and she'll start telling me about some case, I'm like, it gives me nightmares. That guy is the scariest guy to me. So I can't handle it. I can't handle the details of what that guy did.
I want to make you watch The Omen.
No.
You've never seen The Omen?
Yeah,
sure. Gregory Peck.
I believe my son is the devil.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. Well, Martin, you'll love this since you're older. This is an old bit I used to do that you probably don't remember. This was Gregory Peck auditioning to play multiple Megs in Silence of the Lambs. It's like,
God.
Mr. Peck, you don't need to do this. You're a big star. No, please, I'd like to do it. But you're a big star, and I don't think the role's going to fit you because everyone's going to stop and say, that's Gregory Peck.
Please, I've rehearsed, and I'd like to try it. I can smell your cunt. How's that?
Well, that's wonderful, Mr. Peck, but
I can do it again. I can smell.
Thank you. That's good. Thank you.
That's Oscar worthy right there.
Right there. And then the world doesn't get to see that because there's no more live performing. What is the name of your podcast?
It's called Why Do I Like This?
Why Do I Like This? That's the name of my sex podcast.
Yeah. Well, that's the
Did you say your sex bike?
My sex bike.
I am curious. Is, though,
do you over there if you have some podcast? Podcast?
Yeah.
A podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Why Do I Like This? It's just a Patreon-only thing, too, because when I first got here,
smart.
I was like, I have no money. How am I going to get money? But speaking of, personally, just curious, because I talked to Jimmy Pardo about this a couple of months ago, just in general, like, do you think stand-up will come back? How, if it does, what's going to look like? Because we were talking about how, like,
It will come back in the way that it will never go away because it's an essential form of human communication. I don't know what the business model of it will be.
Right. That's the thing is all the clubs, so many clubs are closing.
Uh-huh.
There's going to be a stigma, like being in the best clubs are ones that are like where you're
packed. Yeah, but I think that people can't wait to get back to that. I think that there's a vaccine that people get at, they're going to be out in force. I hope it comes back, but I don't like to do Zoom shows.
No.
I like to do monologues and things and weird stories that don't require the conversational pretext of a stand-up show.
Right.
More presentational, I find. It's weird.
I did a little gig on Facebook.
Yeah.
Which was a catastrophe.
Yeah, it was just like him and a keyboard on Facebook. I don't know. I can't... Because with the safety measures, I know some places like, oh, well, we just let it's like half capacity or whatever, but clubs, you can't survive on that.
Well, they're doing them on drive-in theaters. Like, people, like, what, do they beep instead of
laughing? Yes, they do. They do. They hold their home.
Yeah.
But doesn't that seem not...
It's like a sketch to me. It feels like a sketch.
Yeah. And I can't imagine being on stage in that situation.
Well, you sort of point their windscreen washers at the comic.
That's crying laughing.
Right? Wouldn't you feel so weird just being like, thank you for your honks?
I think it's going to be 2022. Because, right. I mean, I've got my final farewell gig that was booked for June this year, and we put it back to June next year, and I'm still not sure it's going to happen.
Yeah. The great thing in this country is once the vaccine is ready, the fucking ding-dongs who won't get it.
Totally.
Because they're tracking my movements.
Like, oh, Bill Gates. Bill Gates really cares about what I do in my life.
I don't need to know when you go to Walmart, Gunther. Yes.
Thank you. I love that logic, too, that like Bill Gates gives a fuck about
By the way, you have a phone with you at all times. The government already knows.
Everyone already knows. It's just the aggressive stupidity, the loud stupidity.
It's not the stupidity, it's the arrogance of the stupidity.
Yes. And that's right back to my parents. Like, whenever I even slightly go like, hey, I don't think that's a thing, they're like, why don't you do some research? Why don't you stop being so naive? And I'm the dumb one.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, Dana, my eldest sister is an epidemiologist.
Oh, gosh.
Who works for the state of Illinois. She runs the department that tracks diseases across the US. And I don't go on Twitter very much, but, you know, Ian Brown from the Stone Roses.
Yes, of course.
He's transpired to be sort of anti-vaxxer nutcase, chemtrail.
There's a lot of those people.
And it's just
former friends of mine.
Yeah. It's just so infuriating when people say, do your research. And I'm like, my sister's been fucking researching this for 35 years.
That's their way of shutting down an argument. Kat, my girlfriend, has the best example of that. Oh, you're a feminist? Name every woman.
I know you went to med school and everything, but I've seen 4 YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So
that was my mother before she went, well, cuckoo bananas. But, you know, my doctor says I have to take my heart pill every day. So what I'm going to do is 3. No, stop.
Yes.
Yeah. Then there's some shit I ordered from a witchcraft magazine. I'm going to take that.
Yes. You started the sentence by saying, doctor, that's what you should listen to. Yeah. I just don't. Why is everyone so aggressively dumb? Just be like me and know how dumb you are and be quiet about it.
Yeah. I don't understand. And it's like that woman with the teeth. And then, you know, then you give it to them and they, I can't figure it out.
I can't.
I blame it on demon sperm.
Demon sperm.
It's a fool who looks for logic in the chambers of the human hunt.
Yes. I miss you dearly, too. Call me anytime.
Pip, pip. Is that what I say?
Cheers. Cheerio.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbauer.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano. Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
I'm a person, I'm a singer, I love to sing, and DJ, boom, peace out, you want me, peace out.